Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofvashon.org at your convenience. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and happy to have you with me. Thanks so much for joining me. Today is going to be a lot of fun. We're getting a tour of the front line of activism for a livable future on our planet. To guide us on that tour is our own Bill Moyer, co-founder and executive director of Vashon's Backbone Campaign. Welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you, Susan.
You're a movie star.
Oh, I wouldn't go that get that crazy. Exaggerate.
Bill is one of the folks featured in an upcoming film, The Race to Save the Planet.
Race to Save the World.
That's it. Race to Save the World. Yes, right. Yeah. And it's going to be, well, tell us about it. How did you get into this?
Well, this filmmaker contacted me years ago, and I helped bring him to one of our action camps that we used to hold, training activists at the what we refer to as the old youth hostel here on Ranch mm-hmm. Hostel on the island. And in that process, Joe Gantz, the filmmaker, met a bunch of local activists and started interviewing a whole bunch of folks. And then eventually he asked me to continue to follow me and my family and interview us in the context of our home about just the impact of being engaged as an activist, and how does that impact the family, and why do we do it, and then what's Aziza and Esther are in the film as well, as are families and loved ones of a number of people, and a lot of folks who are doing really excellent work. A number of them are from this area, and some of them are from elsewhere. But yeah, it's pretty exciting, and I think it's a pretty exciting way for Backbone Campaign right now to be able to share the lessons that we've learned over the many years of doing this work with other people around the country, and honestly around the world. We started to connect with folks like Extinction Rebellion in the UK, for instance.
Which is another great group. For those folks who may not know a lot about Backbone Campaign, can you give us a little history? As I recall, when you started, 2001, was it?
2003. We started, there was a kind of a rumblings around 2001, 2002, as a bunch of artists from Vashon decided we were going to get together and form what they call an affinity group. And we'd get together for potlucks, and then we decide what are the kinds of things creative stuff we could do in this sort of post 9/11 world, and to try to stop what has turned into an incredible disaster of the invasion of Iraq, etc. So that creative group evolved into is the foundation of the Backbone Campaign, because we got together and say, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we brought the Democrats a giant 70-foot spandex backbone and started giving out backbone trophies. So people like Hans Nelson and Jim Farrell and Kathy Dismay and lots of other folks were involved at that early stage, Billy Jarko. Anyway, lots of folks.
So you created these gigantic puppets and took them, as I recall, and trophies, and took them, as I recall, to Democrats who were standing up to the Republicans who were doing these horrendous things like invading Iraq, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
so the backbone
and I
idea
would say
was
that folly does not discriminate according to party affiliation. And that, and just to clarify, we are not a party-affiliated organization. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. And I think we very quickly transitioned in that time, 2003, 2004, 2005, from this theme of giving the Democrats a backbone to giving we the people a backbone and helping build social movement. And so the creativity that we brought to those initial, more of an anti-war movement, became expanded to be part of a larger social justice movement and environmental justice movement, climate, and both supporting national campaigns, but also supporting local efforts. So like the resistance to the Glacier Gravel Mine in on Maury Island in 2008-2009 was a pivot for us, where we started to say, okay, the collusion between corporate and elected power manifests in local places that people love. Let's support those local fights with the kind of creative visual tools that we're pretty good at. And we were just kept, honestly, after 17 years, now we are pretty nationally known for those sorts of tools and things like kayaktivism and light projection and giant banners and puppets.
Yeah, and you have become a resource to activists around, literally around the world, who come here to Vashon and perhaps other places to learn how to organize and how to basically stand up for those issues that really matter to them. Tell us how you and the Backbone Campaign folks train others.
Well, for years, for about 10 years in a row, we hosted action camps where we'd have anywhere from 30 to 80 activists from around the country and sometimes internationally come to Vashon Island and learn things about strategy or creative communications or what we call artful activism. And everybody was basically, it was an opportunity for folks to learn a way to expand their engagement, to lean into their comfort or discomfort in a safe way that was proportionate to their capacity to take a risk. And we always emphasize the importance of that we're appealing to what people love. We're appealing to what people want to protect. We're appealing to the unassailable values, and also to maximize visibility and amplify people's engagement with a proportion, a risk level that is appropriate for where they're at. So we don't necessarily aren't itching to get people arrested, but when people become ready for that kind of engagement, we would help people understand how to do that safely and effectively with things like, as you'll see in the movie, things like tripods, like for a blockade. So that was a skill that Abby and others could learn at a Backbone action camp.
Tripods?
And then in the last years,
tripods
we've been
for a blockade? Wait, tell
me.
What does that mean when you say tripods for a blockade? What does that mean?
Well, a tripod is a large blockade tripod is three 22-foot aluminum poles that are lashed together at the top, and that they're deployed at a particular strategic location to either block traffic or to occupy a space, or in Abby's case, and the Delta 5 group, they blockaded a part of a rail yard to stop an oil train, or what we would refer to as a bomb train. And they then, of course, when they do something like that, you have to be prepared to be arrested. And then you have to be able prepared to go through that court process. But all of that process is an opportunity to elevate the issue in your community, in the press, et cetera. And so it's very important that you do these things skillfully and with a real sensitivity to what are the values that are underlie those sorts of actions, and how do you communicate those values so that you're actually enrolling people into a movement. Not necessarily that they're going to jump in the middle of traffic someplace, but maybe they're going to do something more than they've done before.
Tell us about some of your successes. Tell us a story about something you're really a success that happened anywhere that you're really proud of, other than this film, of course, which we'll get.
Well, I think that there's lots of ways of making change. And I think that we've had successes that are less flashy, but really important. And I think that helping to convene the group that that started or invited PSCCU onto the island when we didn't have a credit union on Vashon.
PSCCU, for those who don't.
That's a really cool thing, right? Yeah. But it's not the kind of thing that people associate with Backbone Campaign. Obviously, it was a big deal to be part of the community-wide effort with Preserve Our Islands and others to stop the industrial gravel mine from going in on Maury Island.
Which is now a park, a beautiful park with tremendous trails. And just for those who don't know, PSCCU is Puget Sound Cooperative Credit Union,
right?
Which is a banking service that the Backbone Campaign helped to create here on Vashon Island.
That's right.
So go ahead, finish with your successes.
Yeah, so that's a less typical example. A lot of people wouldn't necessarily know that or associate that with our kind of activism. But anyway, change making happens in many ways, right? So so the fight against the Maury Island gravel mine that happened with a lot of collaboration throughout the community and folks like Alethea Dolstead and Logan Price and Nick Simmons and all these people who were quite young at that time. All of us were younger then, about 11 years or so. And we started to use on water tactics. We used kayaks I was so really committed to or convinced that on shifting the area, the field of battle, if you will, from in the streets or in the typical places to a non-typical place really inspired something deeper and made things more newsworthy, et cetera. Each year we would incorporate kayak training into our trainings. And sometimes we gave those we did a camp in Michigan. We did a camp in Maryland. And we did, like I said, multiple camps here. But so when Shell in 2015 decided to rebring their giant Polar Pioneer drilling rig and another drilling rig, into Puget Sound, this offered a great opportunity, and it felt like we had been kind of preparing for it for those last, many years. And so we asked the local organizers if we could help organize a flotilla, and then we got involved in and helped create the Shell No campaign. And that was that's a long story, but, some of the photos from it are really fantastic. And they look like people are blockading this giant thing from going through.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, that was just a family-friendly paddle on the water to give the impression. We wanted people to be able to imagine themselves blockading an oil, rig. We had this family-friendly, non-escalated experience where hundreds and hundreds of kayaks came out, and a number of canoe families and from the Coast Salish peoples. And we had this big rally on the water where there was no escalated risk except for just the fact of the safety of being on the water. And that provided these incredible photos that ended up stirring action from the Obama administration, because Obama wanted to be the climate president. And at the same time, he was allowing these Arctic drilling operations to happen. So that and many other actions, like the actions down on the water under the St. John's Bridge in blockading the Fenica icebreaker from that Shell operation, all became part of the Shell No campaign. And that actually ended up getting Obama to stop future leases and Shell to abandon its Arctic drilling operation. So I have to say, in terms of making the untouchable, like huge thing, touchable and helping people have an impact, I think that's a pretty high point for Backbone Campaign's history.
For anyone who's seen the trailer for the film, racing to save the world.
The Race to Save the World.
The Race to Save the World. I'll get this right at some point. Anyone who's seen that trailer, you see Bill Moyer at the prow of, I guess it's a kayak, but you look like Leonardo DiCaprio in the Titanic saying, "I am king of the world." It's very dramatic. And it was a dramatic success. You did get Shell to back down at that point, correct?
Well, yeah, it took a little bit. I mean, Shell went up half-heartedly, drilled in, instead of doing two wells, they drilled in one because Obama actually enforced a rule that already exists called the Walrus Rule, which was a rule that you couldn't have two drilling operations within 15 miles of each other during walrus migration season. So for some reason, it took a bunch of kayaktivists to wake them up that they already had that rule. And so they eliminated one of the drilling operations. And then, the universe intervened and there was a gash in the icebreaker that had the cap that was supposed to be the emergency shutoff for if anything went wrong, like it happened in the Gulf with the BP. So then they had their operation. They said it was just, disappointing results. And what they also said, and with regulatory uncertainties, which is code for the protesters have the hearts of the people, have won the hearts of the people, so we don't want to spend more billions of dollars for something we might never get to actually do.
It worked.
It worked.
It works in interesting ways. So I didn't necessarily follow everything you guys did during the Trump administration, but what did you do? What did the Backbone campaign focus on during the Trump administration? What were you able to achieve?
Well, we, in 2016, we had started to pivot a good amount of our energy to a project called Solutionary Rail, which you and I have spoken about.
That's right.
And so that became one track that we were, so to speak, that we were traveling down. And we published the book, Solutionary Rail, and we started engaging with lots of different allies. Often what you could consider unlikely allies in very rural places or with labor or, urban communities, and connecting the dots on decarbonization, rail, freight, transport, et cetera. And so that continues to be a very large part of our work. We also worked hard to to make sure that the hateful rhetoric and was not normalized. Like there was nothing normal about the misogyny and racism that was and violence that was embedded in that last administration. So we actually have a network of about, well, we just for example, we have these spotlights that we use to shine messages on buildings. So we've shipped over 50 of those to different communities around the country. And we've trained people how to use those lights to project their messages in a legal and safe and non-destructive way. So we strengthened that part of our work, our solidarity brigades. And we've continued to train people and build alliances through that time. I feel like if you listen to the Biden administration or the House Climate Action Plan, you'll hear things that sound like Solutionary Rail come up. And they're not everything we hope for, but we're having an impact in various ways.
It is. The needle is starting to move. How much does the Backbone campaign training or activist style involve civil disobedience?
Well, I'd say, again, it's an arc that is appropriate to where what people are ready to do. I think of sometimes the limitations on our action and our creativity are only limitations on our imagination. They're not actually legal limitations. Diane de Prima had this quote, this poem called Rant, and in it it says, The only war that matters is the war against the imagination. All other wars are subsumed in it. Ooh. So this idea that every failure of policy is really a failure of the imagination. And that when, and so sometimes we see things like, oh, we can't have a giant banner over an overpass. That's absolutely untrue. We can have a giant banner over an overpass, and it's completely legal and safe to do that. Oh, we can't shine. How could we possibly be shining a light on a private building? Well, as long as you're on a public sidewalk and you're not hurting anybody or, you know, causing a car accident, you're good. And so a lot of the things that we imagine as obstacles are actually obstacles only in our imagination. And so expanding people's sense of what's possible is what I call like exercising the muscle of rebellion. Like if rebellion or liberty is a thing, I think of it as a muscle that needs to be exercised, because none of us like standing up again. None of us like to be scolded very few. I don't like to be scolded, but I remember like the first time I was arrested in the 80s, and I haven't been arrested very often, as hard as I try sometimes. It's hard to get over that threshold of having someone, an authority figure, tell you to do something and you say no. You know, it makes me kind of still remember that sensation of wanting to cry a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So nobody wants to be yelled at, et cetera. But to stand in our values and to honor our obligations to future generations and all the heroic, regular people who've brought the fight for justice and sustainability to the place it is currently, we have to be able to push into that threshold. And so I'd say that, you know, a small percentage of our work is in civil disobedience. And I would say, like, when we do trainings, maybe 15% of the time is dealt with in that realm. More of it's like knowing your rights and how to do legal stuff without being shut down. And then again, just how to see your labor and the work that you do in these scenarios as grounded in protecting what you love.
We're talking with Bill Moyer, co-founder and executive director of Backbone Campaign, here on Real Talk on Voice of Vashon. And before we run out of time, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the film that folks are going to be able to see on Sunday, April 25th at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Because when we opened, you mentioned it covers somewhat the impact on families of activism. Tell us more about that. What can we expect to see in this film? And what did you feel was revealed in this film that folks might not have expected to see?
Well, I think when people see a film about climate, they expect to see scientists, you know, giving them lots of like numbers and charts and gloom and doom scenarios to scare them into action, which I think can be somewhat paralyzing, honestly. And this film is not anything like that. This is a film about regular people doing extraordinary things, or at least pushing the envelope of what is possible for them. And the challenges that brings, both internally, for the cost of that as a person, like, and how do you find balance in that? And the cost on the people that you love. And so this film, has, you know, a young teen activist doing his work in the context of his family and watching his struggle. And it has, you know, a mother who is confronting her own fears and taking an action, going to a trial, to a guy who's like taught kids his whole life, and he's like, he's lectured them about climate change and he feels accountable to do something more. And he shuts down a tar sands pipeline and spends, you know, 6 months in prison in North Dakota to an elder who has bad knees, an elder woman who hears the call to walk across the country And she answers that. And then, you know, so it's all these various sorts of people who are struggling with how do we increase our engagement and to so that we can live with integrity in this time in a way that draws in others.
That's moving, incredibly moving. And I'm looking forward to seeing the film. If folks can't make it at 1 o'clock on the 25th, will it be possible for people to see it in other ways at other times?
Yes, actually, if people go to backbonecampaign.org, and I believe at the bottom of the front page, there is a way to sign up to watch the film at your leisure. So you can watch the film at the time that works for you over the next number of days. And yeah, at the bottom of the page at backbonecampaign.org, there's a link to Race to Save the World. And you can get a ticket and you'll get a code to watch the film at your leisure. And then you're welcome to join the panel discussion on Sunday the 25th. And if you can't make the panel discussion, we'll certainly be posting that at a later time. But this is a pretty important moment for Backbone Campaign and for others involved in this film. But for Backbone Campaign, I think it's especially important because it's an opportunity for the 17, 18 years of work that we're doing to get a little bit of publicity so that we can also continue to amplify all the investment that our community has made in our organization and make sure we get to spread that and share that with others around the world.
A huge investment and an outstanding contribution, Bill Moyer. Thank you so much for creating the Backbone Campaign, for joining us here today on Real Talk. I'm shocked, but we're out of time. And once again, the film is The Race to Save the World. I got it right. April 25th. Go to backbonecampaign.org and sign up to see our folks here from Vashon, but also folks from all over the country who are regular people taking extraordinary action to save the world. And folks, it's something we all got to do, and it might inspire you to do something yourselves. Thanks for listening. Thanks for spending a few minutes with me here on Real Talk every Tuesday at noon. Thank you, Bill. Voiceofvashon.org and KVSH 101.9 FM.